Welcome to the Philharmonic Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Today is February 18th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week, and it's a week that's been dominated by inflationary fears that are being stoked by the massive surge that we're seeing in a number of soft commodities. This has also been a week in which the Egyptian crisis has seen a certain amount of contagion, and that has raised anxiety levels to a certain extent, although I personally am rather skeptical as to what kind of impact this is actually having on markets. This has also been a week in which we see that Wall Street has continued to improve upon its medium-term uptrend, and as we are looking to the close on Friday, it's about an hour away. The Dow Jones is up 50 points, which is another day after a number of consecutive days to the upside. China was a little bit easier into the end of the week, but it's been up, I think, 8 out of the last 10 days, so that's really quite a good performance in China as well. Back in November, we talked a lot about the potential for mean reversion, particularly for those markets that had done so remarkably well in 2010. And that was a common sense type of approach for the simple reason that so many of those markets become really quite overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages. And if there's any mathematical fact in markets, is that eventually, once something has become overextended relative to a trend mean, such as the 200-day moving average, then you are going to get a reversionary process in one shape or form. And that's what we've had over the last almost 4 months. At the same time, markets that hadn't done much at all in 2010, particularly Wall Street and a good portion of Europe, have moved to positions of relative performance. And some of the better performers in that sector, such as the Nasdaq or the S&P, or indeed the DAX in Germany, have also now become really quite overextended relative to the 200-day moving averages. And it's equally the case now that they are at risk of a mean reversion correction. And that mean reversion could take a number of different shapes, and they quite likely will depend on which market we're talking about as to how fast that will occur. But you're either going to have a ranging consolidation which allows the 200-day moving average to catch up, or you're going to have a swift pullback to that moving average, which is much swifter in the short term but provides perhaps a better buying opportunity over the medium term. And you could have a mix of those two eventualities. But certainly the more that we see some of these developed country indices pushing on to new medium-term highs, the greater the likelihood is that we're going to have some form of reversionary type pullback towards a trend mean like the moving average. And considering the fact that we've seen so many of these Asian markets in particular having pulled back to the 200-day moving averages and beginning to find support in the region of those areas, they are probably a less risky investment opportunity at this juncture, because the likelihood still remains that they are capable of reasserting their medium-term uptrends over the next few months. Whereas there is a strong likelihood that we're going to have some form of reversionary process emerging from some of those developed markets. This week was also notable because there was a meeting of the G20 finance ministers in Paris, and one of the items on their agenda, beyond the shadow of a doubt, has been food price inflation. And food prices have been easier the last 2 days because there is certainly a threat that countries are going to get together and attempt to damp down on speculation. However, speculation isn't the only thing that has been driving these commodity prices higher, and this really has been a remarkable week for commodities. And just to summarize, the cotton market went over $2 for the first time in nominal terms this week. It formed another really quite large Q reversal this time. It was limit up at the open this morning and is finishing limit down here today. This is also coinciding with a contract roll because of President's Day on Monday, and the first notice day for the March contract is on Tuesday. This is a big roll date for that contract in here today, and it's finishing limit down. So we potentially are seeing at least a short term and potentially medium term peak for cotton right here in here today. This has been a weak day for the grains, particularly the soybean market, which is down 43. Soybeans has been going pretty much nowhere for the last 6 weeks, and that's been an example of a ranging consolidation, which is beginning to allow that moving average to catch up with it. Wheat was also down 27 in here today. So the grains and beans, which have done so remarkably well in the last few weeks, are encountering a little bit of selling pressure in here, and that is probably more to do with the fact that you've had this meeting of the G20 ministers, and food price inflation is very much now a front page news item. You had reports this week from the UN and the World Bank talking about the potential for food riots. It's a widely accepted fact that the price of food was a contributory factor in the revolutions that we've had in Tunisia and Egypt. And when something becomes front page news and a largely political argument ensues as to how prices are going to become lower, then for those with long leveraged speculative positions, it becomes an increasingly risky type of environment. Against that background, we've had quite a long period now, upwards of 15 months, where global weather hasn't been at all accommodative to increasing crop supplies. And this is happening at a time when demand for food is continuing to increase. One of the most important factors in the global economy today is that the pace of economic growth in the world's population centers is outpacing population growth. So that's expanding the middle classes, and for the first time you have hundreds of millions of people who have been raised out of abject poverty into the middle classes, and they can now afford to consume more calories. And that's creating an increased demand for food at just the time when the global climate isn't particularly conducive to improving crop yields, with the really quite strong La Nina that has been going on for the last year and a half. And there is potential that that inclement weather is going to last for a while longer, which could indeed keep upward pressure on food prices. And when one looks at long-term charts, and we have a number of long-term data sets in the inflation-adjusted chart section of the chart library, you can see, for example, that with cotton, although prices are up nearly three times since last July, that they're still less than half of where they were in inflation-adjusted terms at the 1974 peak. So while prices have gone up a lot, they have broken 30-year inflation-adjusted downtrends, and there is every reason to expect that when these commodity prices do hit medium-term peaks, that on any subsequent pullback, that they're likely to find support at progressively higher levels. We're into a new secular bull market for food commodities, and while the bull market in the precious metals has been going for the better part of 10 years, and for industrial commodities, probably more like 8 years, and same for oil, the food commodities have been considerably more volatile, and they only really broke out of long-term bases back in 2008, gave up almost their entire advances, found support above are at the upper side of those long-term bases and are now breaking upwards once more. There's the significant risk that we're going to see a number of these food commodities hitting new nominal highs in this particular portion of the bull market. But this increased volatility and the fact that the pricing structure now seems or appears to be capable of supporting higher prices over the medium term suggests that food price inflation is here to stay. And that is certainly something that is beginning to be realized by bond investors. Bond yields bottomed back in 2008. The US Treasury yield retested that low back in September and formed a higher reaction low. And now prices for government bonds have fallen really quite considerably since September. They're perhaps a little bit oversold in the short term, but with nascent inflationary pressures, it's unlikely that we're even going to see those September highs for government for treasury prices retested. And given the fact that just as commodity prices had been trending lower on an inflation-adjusted basis for much of the last 30 years, U.S. Treasury yields have also been trending lower for over the same time frame, and that's an interesting correlation. Because inflationary pressures, particularly from commodities, will factor into the monetary or the way that various countries calculate their inflation sooner or later. Now, it's certainly been felt faster in a number of emerging markets, particularly in Asia, over the last few months, at least mostly because those countries' measures of inflation are much more reliant on food and energy prices than those in the USA and in Europe. But the global economy has prospered over the last 30 years because of the competitive devaluation of inflation or disinflation that has been promoted by globalization. But wage price inflation is beginning to emerge in China. And the emergence of a much larger middle class in some of the world's major population centers does sort of suggest that the labor costs that were able that helped to bring down the cost of manufactured goods just about everywhere over the last 30 years have bottomed. And wage pressures in China are beginning to rise, and they're rising elsewhere as well. And that would suggest that one of the core disinflationary aspects to the disinflation that has dominated markets over the last 30 years is being removed. So we're starting to see that commodity price inflation is certainly leading. Wage price inflation isn't a problem at all in the USA and in most of Europe. But it is beginning to become a problem in some of the world's big manufacturing areas. And that would suggest that since their margins are already razor thin, that they will have no choice but to begin to increase their prices over the medium to longer term. And that would mean that while they have been able to export deflationary pressures over the last 30 years, that they'll begin to start exporting inflationary pressures over the medium term. And that will put additional upward pressure on US treasuries and gilts and bunds. So we're moving into a new inflationary cycle. And that is certainly helping to support the precious metal market. Gold has found support in the region of $1,350. It's back up towards $1,390. Silver pushed through to a new 30-year high this week. It's closing out the week in the region of $32.50. And the peak back in, I think it was 1981, with the attempted corner of the market was close to $40. And I remember it wasn't really that long ago, less than 5 years, when silver was trading at closer to $5 or $6, and the intended expectation was that it would probably take out its 1980 peak at some point in the long distant future. But it's happened considerably faster than I had ever expected, and with only $8 away from its crisis peak, this has been remarkably impressive action. This has also been a good week for the palladium market, and platinum continues to lag in here, but it's a generally bullish environment for precious metals. Industrial metals have also done well this week, with nickel up $600 into the close this week, or in here today. Copper continues to hold in this $4.50 area, and aluminium and lead both look like they are in the process of completing relatively lengthy consolidations. Tin remains the sector leader and continues to push on to new high ground. So it's a generally bullish bull market environment for just about all of the industrial and precious metals. And it's an increasingly risky situation in the soft commodities. If we look at the world in terms of two separate stories, the dominant story out there is the greatest urbanization in history. And we can look at the countries that are going to benefit from that evolution and those that are less likely to benefit. Well, certainly with the demographics in some of those countries and the improving governance that has fed through into much of Asia and Latin America, they're the countries that are most likely to benefit from the increase in their middle classes and the demand for consumer goods that is helping to foster. Commodity-producing countries and countries that export the type of machinery that these high-growth areas need to fuel their economic growth will also benefit. And companies that particularly dominate their respective niche in the global economy and are leveraged to growth in the global economy, and indeed in those high-growth markets in Asia and Latin America, are also stand to grow. At the moment, we're seeing that the US economy appears to have turned the corner in terms of this recession. So, whereas it was Asia and Latin America did much of the heavy lifting from the over the last 2 years, there's a strong likelihood that in the next couple of years we're going to move into another period of synchronized global economic expansion. And that's a generally bullish environment for stock markets. Interest rates are going to start rising at some point in the USA, in Europe, the UK, and potentially even Japan. But they're coming from a remarkably low level. Monetary conditions remain extraordinarily accommodative in most of those regions. So there is plenty of capital available for leveraged investors, and that is helping to fuel the bull markets in risk assets that we have right now. We haven't had any form of real tightening in rising interest rates in a number of these potential carry trade jurisdictions. So this remains a generally accommodative situation, and even when interest rates do begin to rise, that could even be seen as a positive if it's in response to inflationary pressures. Right now, we're seeing that inflation is becoming a public priority, and the risks are that something is going to be done about it by various central banks and potentially on a concerted basis. In the meantime, the charts will likely give us the clues, and right now it does suggest that the food commodities have hit at least a near-term peak and are potentially in a mean reversionary phase. But precious metals and industrial metals have picked up the relative strength right now and do look like that they can push on to further highs. Last year was a pretty grim year for China, and were China's large caps, because China's mid and small caps did really spectacularly well. But the large caps have really rallied really quite considerably in the last couple of weeks, and are in up to an area now where they are threatening the upwards of 15-month progression of lower rally highs. So if those highs start to get taken out, that would be a major signal that the demand dominant environment has returned, and it could be a reasonably good year for China this year if that were to occur. And Japan is also worthy of mention, because the second section index, which has so often been a leader and is still trading at a price to book of about 0.7, is in the process of breaking out of an 18-month to 2-year range or base formation. It's certainly not confirmed yet that the breakout is going to hold, and it will need to push back above about the 2400 point level to really indicate that breakout has occurred. But it's been a moribund few years for the Japanese market, and those banks in particular are at historic lows. So there is certainly catch-up potential if we see this Japanese yen getting weaker in here. And it's been largely range-bound against the US dollar, and significant weakness in the Japanese yen would likely be an important catalyst for the stock market. But the Nikkei is currently pushing up towards 11,000. The TOPIX is range-bound below 1,000. So these are reasonably important levels, and if the TOPIX were to break above the 1,000 point level, that would be quite a psychological barrier, and that second section does is it has often been a lead indicator and is breaking upwards. So we could find that 2011 is a promising year for Japan, and those indices would need to now sustain some pretty serious technical damage to check potential for them to sustain upward breaks over the medium term. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, but wish all the best to all of you.